Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Answers from the Lab, where we share Mayo Clinic knowledge and advancements on the state of testing and science from laboratory leaders and the people who are making it happen behind the scenes. I'm Dr. Bobby Pritt, Chair of the Division of Clinical Microbiology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. With us today is Dr. Thiel, the Director of the Infectious Disease and Serology Laboratory, and together we co-direct the Vector-Borne Disease Laboratory Service. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Thiel.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Pritt.
You're a frequent guest on this podcast. It's always so nice to have you back.
Thanks. It's pretty fun. We talk about good topics.
We do. So usually, as you know, I ask the questions of the guest on our podcast, but today we both have an interest in the topic we're going to be covering, which is tick-borne diseases. So I think we're both going to be asking questions today, which will be fun.
That's right. I get to put you in the hot seat this time.
Great. Well, why don't I start? So let's talk about tick season this year. Spring is here. We're starting to enter the tick season. Have we been seeing ticks? Have you been seeing any requests for tick-borne disease testing? What have you been hearing?
So I have not seen ticks recently because we got like, I think, 8 inches of snow.
Right.
So any ticks were buried. I'm sure they're still alive under there. But I do think that tick season is starting. I know from a volume perspective, we are starting to see increased requests for tick-borne testing, both in serology and in molecular, as we'll talk about. So I think the time is now. We're getting into it.
Yeah, this is definitely a good time to be talking about this. Yeah. I was doing a little reading last night. There was a report in February in Minnesota, a black-legged or deer tick was detected in February in Minnesota. So that's unheard of. We definitely had a mild winter and an early thaw.
That's
and then
right.
snow. And now that's it's thawing
right.
again.
And now it's thawing again. Yeah. But you're right. So tick season will be ramping up soon. And ticks transmit a number of different pathogens, as we've talked about. But do you want to talk about kind of what are the more common tick-borne pathogens are and also some of the emerging ones that we're worried about?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. As you know, and probably many of our listeners know, there are a large number of tick-borne diseases, and the number continues to grow as we detect new pathogens. Lyme disease is still by far the most important tick-borne disease in the United States. It's the most common vector-borne disease out of all the vector-borne diseases, including those transmitted by mosquitoes, actually, in the United States. And it's estimated that we have about 476,000 cases each year of Lyme disease. So that's a very large one that everyone should be aware of, and they should know if they're living in an area that is endemic for Lyme disease. But then, of course, that's not the only disease. That there's other bacterial diseases. So we have bacterial diseases such as anaplasmosis or lichiosis. We have and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. We also have babesiosis, which is a parasitic infection. And then we have Powassan virus, which is a relatively emerging tick-borne disease, and that's caused by a virus, Powassan virus. And what I thought was interesting, and just thinking, reflecting about all the tick-borne diseases we have seven new pathogens that were only identified in the past 2 decades that are transmitted by ticks. And those would be Borrelia miyamotoi, Powassan virus, Bourbon virus, Heartland virus, Rickettsia parkeri, Rickettsia species 364D, which I believe does have a name now. And then the two pathogens that were detected from the teams at Mayo Clinic working with CDC and state health departments, Borrelia mayonii and Ehrlichia muris oclorensis. We're going to learn more. We're going to see more of these tick-borne diseases.
You know, I think we talk about some of these as being emerging, but I don't know that they're emerging. I think we've just started being able to detect them, but they've probably been here for a long time. Yeah.
I think you're right. That's an important point. They might be emerging to us, but not necessarily emerging in this geographic region.
Right.
So those are some of the more common tick-borne pathogens. Mm-hmm. Now, given that there's an array of them, keeping in mind that Lyme disease is still our number one in terms of cases each year, I get a lot of questions, and you probably do too, about what would be the diagnostic testing approach. You can order every single test on the menu, but we both know that's not the right way to proceed. So can you describe the algorithmic approach that we've developed?
Yeah, I think this is something that's really nice that we offer, and it is the algorithm. We call it the acute tick-borne diseases testing algorithm. It's available to anybody on the internet. We basically put this algorithm together, thinking about it through a clinician's kind of perspective. So the algorithm really starts with considering the clinical presentation of the patient, taking into consideration things like what are their actual symptoms? Do they have classic symptoms of Lyme, like an erythema migrans rash or Bell's palsy or something like that? We also take into consideration whether or not there's known tick exposures, where the patient has been geographically. When we think of Lyme disease, yes, we know it's endemic in New York State, but if you've only been to New York City and not outside in the wilderness, maybe Lyme isn't as high on the differential as something else. So really carefully understanding and recognizing what the true exposures are for tick-borne pathogens is important, and that's part of the algorithm. And then based on that geographic exposure, as well as time of year and symptoms, we delineate the algorithm based on what to test for based on those geographic exposures. So for example, if the patient had traveled to Arizona or California, that area of the world, we'd recommend.
It's really a different group of organisms.
You're not going to be thinking Lyme disease, but you might be thinking about relapsing fever due to other Borrelia species. If you've been in areas like the Carolinas or Oklahoma, Arkansas, Tennessee, might be considering more Rocky Mountain spotted fever, which is caused by Rickettsia rickettsii. And then for the other kind of classic Lyme, Babesia, Anaplasma endemic areas, we recommend testing for Lyme disease, of course, if the symptoms fit, but then also looking for those other potentially co-transmitted pathogens like Anaplasma and Babesia. So the algorithm really goes through all of those symptoms, exposures, and then recommended testing based on those exposure regions.
Yeah, it's nice that it's a tiered approach too. It really takes into consideration test stewardship, what's the right test for the patient based on where they live, what their symptoms are, and then what the first line test would be versus maybe second line or even third line tests.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, it's freely available. We'll make sure there's a link associated with this podcast if people want to check it out.
So I think one of the keys that you and I always stress when talking to clinicians is there are two key methods when it comes to diagnostic testing for tick-borne diseases. One is the molecular methods where we're detecting genetic material from the pathogens. The other is serology, where we're detecting indirect responses, so antibody generation to those pathogens. And when you use those tests is largely driven by the timing of patient presentation. So molecular testing, we typically recommend for the majority of pathogens to be done in that acute phase of symptoms, anywhere up to 7 to 10 days after symptom onset or before symptom onset is when molecular testing is really most sensitive. After that, in the more convalescent stage of disease, we would recommend doing serologic testing to look for that immune response because the patient may have cleared the organism by that point in time. The one caveat to that is Lyme disease testing. So we know that molecular assays are just not really sensitive for detection of Borrelia burgdorferi in blood or in spinal fluid. So really serology is the best approach for Lyme disease testing. The caveat there is that, you know, if you test a patient too early for antibodies to Lyme disease, the tests are going to be negative. Just the patient hasn't developed an immune response quite yet. So in those situations, or in some situations, you might treat empirically, which is great. You don't need to test the patient for antibodies after treatment for Lyme disease, because if you treat really early on, the patient may not mount a detectable immune response to Lyme disease. But in other patients, you might need a convalescent sample to confirm infection before you consider treatment. So
I think that's a really good point. And I also like what you've added to the algorithm, that if the patient has a classic erythema migrans rash in a highly endemic Lyme disease setting, then that's considered diagnostic. So
right.
Sometimes you don't need to test at all. And
sometimes,
it's important to know when that's the case, because there are false positives and testing is not without risks.
That's right. Yep. There are some situations where you can make the clinical diagnosis, and Lyme is one of them if you have an erythema migrans rash. So we kind of, you know, talked about our classic tests that we have, but your lab, Dr. Pritt, recently introduced two new tests that we've added to the algorithm. Can you tell us about those?
I can. So we talked a little bit about what your frontline tests would be, but then there's other things that are perhaps less common, and it's good to have tests for those as well, being a reference laboratory and a place where you can get some of these tests for less common things. One of them that we just released this year is Heartland Virus PCR. Heartland virus is a potentially serious disease that is similar to ehrlichiosis, where you can get fever, fatigue, nausea, diarrhea, leukopenia, thrombocytopenia, very common symptoms that you see with a lot of tick-borne infections, but can be quite serious and have complications. And this virus was just detected in 2009 in Missouri. There's been more than 50 cases, so relatively low levels, although I have a feeling that there's probably more cases out there that just haven't come to clinical attention because the person gets better and didn't get tested. And because there's a limited number of tests available for Heartland virus. So that's one test now that we've added to our menu. It's not part of our routine PCR panel, but it's something that someone can order. If your tests for bacterial diseases are negative and your patient's not responding to antibiotics, then you might start thinking about some of these viral etiologies. The other test that we've added now is a broad range bacterial PCR and sequencing test for tick-borne bacteria and some zoonotic bacterial pathogens that may have a similar presentation. Leptospira species, for example, with leptospirosis, can occur in similar overlapping timeframes and maybe have some similar symptoms. So this is a sequencing test. It will detect bacteria and then identify which potential pathogenic bacteria are present in a whole blood specimen. It is being a next generation sequencing test, a test that you wouldn't order right off the bat. It's going to take a little longer for a turnaround time. It's going to be a little bit more expensive than your standard routine test. So we recommend this in situations where you've done the standard tick-borne PCR panels and those laboratory methods have failed to yield a diagnosis. This could be another additional test if you're still suspecting a tick-borne pathogen. So yeah, those are our two latest additions to the algorithm.
I think that's really exciting, especially coming up on tick season.
Absolutely. So we're going to see what happens this year, and we'll probably learn a lot because they're new tests. And we may learn that some things are more common than we thought. One thing about the broad range test is it may actually detect novel pathogens as well. So we'll have to stay tuned and see how that goes. So, you know, we're talking about all this diagnosis and all these terrible diseases that you can get from ticks. Probably should talk about prevention because really it's better to prevent tick-borne infections to begin with. And to do that, we need to prevent tick bites. So Dr. Theo, maybe you can end us off here by talking about preventing tick bites to begin with.
Yeah, I think that's really an important point. So there's a number of things that we can do to prevent tick-borne infections. And this would also be valid for mosquito-borne illnesses as well. So I think when we're outside in the forest, in the fields, wherever you may go in the wilderness, if you will, you know, wearing long pants and long sleeves, using insect repellent. In some cases, you may want to treat your clothes with permethrin to kind of have that long-lasting repelling capabilities. Also, when you're going out on walks, staying kind of in the center of trails, not going into the long grasses, which is where ticks really like to kind of hang out and quest to attach to people or to animals. And then doing tick checks when you get home for your entire body, both for you, your family, and your pets is important. And then, of course, treating your pets with tick repellents is really important because, you know, the animals can bring them in and the ticks don't really care. They will go on your animal or on your pet or on you. So I think those are some of the key things that we can do to protect ourselves.
I think you've covered all the important ones there. And of course, animals like dogs can get tick-borne diseases as well. So protecting them. And there is a Lyme disease vaccine for dogs.
Yes.
The exciting news is that there will hopefully soon be Lyme disease vaccine for humans. And they are currently working on this. It's in clinical trials. So we may be seeing a Lyme disease vaccine in the near future. But we don't have one now. So for now, and just in general, good practice preventing tick bites to begin with. I always say if you're going outdoors and you put your sunscreen on, it's just one more thing to add to your routine. Do a quick spray with tick repellent or wear that jacket you've treated with permethrin just as that additional layer of protection, and then check yourself when you come back in from being outdoors.
You know, Dr. Pritt, something that is a question that comes up not maybe uncommonly is, let's say a patient brings in a tick.
Oh,
they've
yes.
identified a tick, they've taken it off themselves or maybe their dog, and they bring it in and say, I want this tested. Should we be testing ticks for tick-borne infections if we're worried about the patient having an infection?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And we get that a lot. So we will identify what tick is present and tell you if it's an Ixodes scapularis, the black-legged or deer tick. And that's important if you're going to give prophylactic antibiotics to a patient. But we should not be, and we do not, test the tick itself for any pathogens it may have inside of us for a number of reasons. It's not a recommended practice. We also don't know if the tick actually had transmitted any pathogens to its human host. In fact, sometimes we get ticks that aren't even engorged, probably weren't even attached and feeding. And so it really doesn't matter what those ticks have. And if we did do that, it would lead to a vast overordering of antibiotics, because in some areas, we know that our ticks are going to have a high rate of tick-borne pathogens inside of them. But again, the bottom line is, did it transfer over to the patient? Because we're treating the patient. Don't treat the lab result. Don't treat what the tick has. What does the patient have? And that's why we focus on testing the human clinical samples.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. That's critical to underscore every year before
Absolutely.
Tick season.
Every year we get that. I think we covered a lot of really good points. The snow is slowly melting. Those of you that were in the north and got dumped on, as the weather clears up, as soon as it gets above freezing again, those ticks are going to be out. So when you're out and about, be careful. And if you are unfortunate enough to get a tick-borne infection, there are tests for you that we've been talking about. And if you are working in a laboratory and want to learn more about those tests, those are freely available information online, the CDC website, and then our algorithm, like we mentioned. All right. Well, Dr. Thiel, it's always great having you on here. Thank you again for joining us today.
This was great. Thank you, Dr. Pritt.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Answers from the Lab. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and don't forget to tune in every Thursday and every other Tuesday.